Welcome to the Produce Industry Podcast Global Fresh Series, your audio source for international produce markets, trends, market reports, and community discussion. Join us somewhere in the world as we cover all aspects of the international produce and supply chain industry. Ladies and gentlemen, here is your host, Juanita Galio.
Hey, produce people! Here we are, the last week of February, cruising along into March. Thank you for joining me on another produce adventure. Today is February 28th, 2024. I am your host, Juanita Galio, coming to you from Long Beach, California. You know, one of the comments that resonates with the produce community are the relationships made due to intergenerational family suppliers. They can be called produce royalty due to the respect they have earned from generation to generation. Before we meet our esteemed guest, we have a few announcements. On the international front, check out the next International Produce Expo taking place March 21st through the 22nd, 2024 in Mumbai, India. Learn how India's fresh produce has evolved since the last event took place in 2019 and the key opportunities and challenges that lie ahead. On the home front, the next Produce Industry Podcast networking event is quickly coming up, March 7th, 2024. In conjunction with the SCPC Expo, 100 VIP guests will set sail in Tampa Bay for an enjoyable time among industry professionals, and we are looking forward to getting together with all of you. A big thank you to our newest sponsor of the Global Fresh Series, Peak of the Market, connecting great farmers with caring consumers. Visit booth 931 at the CPMA Convention and Trade Show to connect with staff and growers and learn how they are working to fill half of every plate across North America with fresh vegetables. We all know companies where the torch has been passed from generation to generation. Today's guest is from a 104-year-old specialty produce wholesaler, importer, intergenerational family-owned company founded in 1919. John Fina Jr. is the president of John Fina Inc., specialty produce, and is a true early pioneer of the specialty produce program on the East Coast.
Hey, John, welcome to the Global Fresh Series.
Thanks, Juanita. Thanks for inviting me.
Our guest today is John Fina Jr., president of a third-generation 104-year-old specialty produce wholesale company, JVI Specialty Produce, located on Essington Avenue in the Philadelphia wholesale market area. The company is really interesting because they started in 1919 in the historic Philadelphia wholesale produce market on Dock Street. After a career in advertising, John returned to the family business and has been there for more than 45 years. He has worked in every capacity from sales to operations and has been in his current role of president since 1987. He'll tell us a bit more about the transition in his company as we get to talking to him. The company had its roots in carrying local and regional products exclusively, but John adapted the company to what is best known for today, a premium specialty produce distributor offering premium produce from Belgium, Holland, Israel, and Spain. And that's where the international aspect comes in within our program today. The company's import division is known as JVI Imports, and they will also be importing brown coconuts from India, which is what grabbed my attention to find out more about this product and JVI Imports. John will tell us about how the company evolved into distributing specialty produce and how the niche is growing. Over to you, John, to get a taste of some of these exotic, yummy fruits.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Very briefly, our company history is kind of typical. My grandfather was an immigrant from Sicily, came when he was 12 years old with his parents, and they settled in South Philadelphia. So the story is a typical urban terminal market story, you know, including a push cart, wine grapes, and, you know, and the rest is history, as they say. My grandfather opened at 151 Dock Street in 1919.
Wow, that's really right now. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's the lobby of a local hotel right now. So things changed. That was a street level market, horses and wagons, and moved from the market moved from there to the food distribution center in South Philadelphia, which most people have been by. If you've been to an Eagles game or a Phillies game, it's adjacent to the stadium section in Philadelphia. We were there from 1959 until 2011, when we opened the newest, best market on the planet, the Philadelphia Wholesale Produce Market. Our market is totally refrigerated. The ambient temperature is 50 degrees. We have loading docks, insulated loading docks. So all of our product comes in. The cold chain is never broken. So it's a big change from our last facility, and in comparison to most of the market facilities around the country, where product is loaded and unloaded at ambient temperature, right. We never break the cold chain. So when we moved to that facility, we were able to do a lot of things we could never do before. We occupy 9 units there in the market, and we have space dedicated to our own ripening rooms, our own packing room, and we have storage for quite some number of containers and trailers of product. Early on, when I joined the company, I noticed you said I had a career in advertising. What was 2 years?
Yeah, it looks
it
like
was 2 years.
You mentioned that you were doing you actually graduated in arts and
it was my degree was in radio and television.
That's
which
right.
Was, mm-hmm. Yeah, a bachelor
which makes it
of
perfect
arts.
For what we're doing right now.
Yeah, so a bachelor of arts and. Mm-hmm. And when I graduated, I went to work for an advertising agency, and I worked in the advertising business for a couple of years until my father convinced me that I would do better selling produce for a living. And having worked in it, you know, the whole time from, I mean, typically as a little kid, we got to go to work sometimes and help out. And so I knew what I was getting into.
Getting up early in the morning and. Sometimes
yes,
feels like it's
in the
middle of the night, right? Especially the wholesale business.
It, 2 o'clock in the morning was typical start time.
Yeah.
That's changed for me, but we still have quite a few staff members that are in that early. But in the early days when I joined the company, it was mostly local produce. My grandfather had developed quite some relationships with local growers up and down the East Coast, and for a short time, he was the largest eggplant grower in the state of Florida, very short time. But he handled produce from a lot of produce from the Carolinas, Maryland, Delaware, South Jersey. And when I joined the company in the mid-70s, we still had some of those relationships, although a lot of the growers that we were dealing with their farms were getting smaller and smaller, and they were doing less and less. We still have great local produce in the Jersey, Maryland, Delaware area, but
especially during the summer.
Yeah, but not near as many growers as there used to be. At that time in the 70s, when I joined, a big part of our business was potted flowers and plants, particularly for the holidays. And bedding plants and vegetable plants. And so we did quite a lot of that. As I started to grow into my role as a salesman and a buyer, we started to move into specialty produce in the early 80s. I was connected with a company out of Israel called Agrexco, which was a government-owned company. And they shipped 100%. They manage 100% of the export from the state of Israel all over Europe. They had many branches in Europe, and they opened one branch in New York. And I was connected to them quite early in their operations there. And actually through the plant business, which they didn't have potted plants, they had cut flowers. And they approached me to sell their cut flowers. And when they realized that most of our business was in produce, we started with some of their produce items, which were very early on. It was mostly
pomegranates or tomatoes.
Oh, pomegranates was a long time later.
Okay. So what did you start with from Israel?
We started with greenhouse vegetables, tomatoes, 5 kilo tomatoes, and very small. This was before tomatoes on the vine. and a little bit of bell peppers, a little bit of persimmons, Sharon fruit, which is a variety that they shipped, Gallia melons. We started a fresh herb program with them.
Yeah, that, you mentioned that, you were the first to bring in certain types of herbs from Israel.
Yeah, we worked with them. It was their program, and we managed the Philadelphia area for them. So it was a full line of culinary herbs. At the time, we were selling a lot of field-grown parsley, dill, mint, that kind of thing. So it was a natural extension for us. And as I said, our local growers were shrinking, diminishing, planting houses instead of crops in their on their farms. So we needed to expand the products that we were handling. So it was a pretty good product line for us. And
yeah, you just at the right time where things were evolving, changing, shifting in different directions, which that happens within produce.
Well, in the herb deal from Israel was interesting in that it was as a result of the fact that Central America was cutting into their market for cut flowers. Mm. It was a much cheaper proposition. And as people invested in Central America, the Israelis found it harder and harder to compete anywhere in the world. And they had these wonderful glass greenhouses. And they said, well, what can we do with those? And they said, well, maybe we could try fresh herbs. And they built a program of over 100 growers. And we had a constant supply, 52 weeks
wow.
a year, of greenhouse grown products that were excellent quality, packed really well. At that time, they packed to European standards, which were higher than our own standards. So the product was very clean. And we built up a really nice business with that. Now, many, many more people are in the herb business. And again, Central America and South
right,
America.
Right. Yes. Yes. You were ahead of your time bringing these herbs over. You know, it's interesting because I just think herbs as something fairly recent that people have started grabbing onto. So to think that quite a ways back, people were interested in that many herbs coming over.
When we first started, the demand was mostly among our food service customers. Retailers really didn't know how to merchandise.
That's what I was wondering.
Mm-hmm. Product? No. So just a few years after we started, we received the product in kilo cartons, and we would break them down into 4-ounce, 8-ounce, and 1-pound units for some of our food service customers.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And that was a big part of our business. And I can honestly say that at the time I was the buyer, and it was a very easy program to run. Food service is very reliable.
And now today is probably flipped, much more competitive.
Now it is. And it's more, there's so much more retail demand, mm-hmm. but it's a kind of product that people can program in pretty well. But there's way more product being sold.
Yeah, and the way that things are being marketed now, especially with the chef programs and cooking, and everyone's promoting herbs to cook different dishes. So it's probably a little bit easier than it would have been then for retail. But I definitely want to pick that back up on this theme and talk more about it, because right now we're going to go to a break and hear from our fabulous sponsors and those relationships in the produce and supply chain. Don't go away now.
Are you ready to elevate your produce aisle and captivate customers with fresh, high-quality vegetables? Look no further than Peak of the Market, where we connect great farmers with caring consumers. Visit booth 931 at the CPMA Convention and Trade Show to connect with our passionate staff and growers to discover how we're working to fill half of every plate across North America. Learn how our core value of being rooted in growers drives every decision we make. From seed to plate, Peak unites the entire supply chain with a full service team handling everything from sales to logistics, packing, and distribution. We've got your veggie needs covered. Don't miss out. Visit Peak of the Market at booth 931 from April 23rd to April 25th at the CPMA Convention and Trade Show in Vancouver, Canada.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Global Fresh Series. If you are just joining us, welcome, and a big thank you to all of our sponsors. Let's return to our guest, John Vina of JVI Specialty Produce, and learn more about fresh herbs from Israel, but he's also going to talk about some of the products that he is bringing in from other parts of the world. John, welcome back too.
Thank you. Yeah, well, fresh herbs was and is a big part of our program. But one of the reasons we were successful, I believe, is because we had year-round production. And when we started in the 80s, local production in the summertime was about the only opportunity to buy fresh herbs. So a lot of retailers really didn't have the merchandising experience. They didn't have good product in the wintertime. Shipping product in from Florida or Mexico in those days was problematic. Shelf life was not so good. Packaging was erratic. When we were in it at that time and through the 90s, the market really started to mature, and a lot of other producers started to get into it. And people realized that you could start to grow this product in greenhouses and have better year-round supplies, or try to close the gap on your supplies.
Do you think what finally brought that up to the surface or to awareness was all these cooking shows and chefs and the way foodies started coming into play and realizing that if you want great dishes, you have to have a lot of different types of herbs? I mean, that's definitely what happens to me. I mean, my herb cabinet looks like a medicine cabinet with and people, why do you have all these herbs? Well, if you're cooking Indian food, you need a whole new set of herbs, a different type of set of herbs. And if you're doing Italian or other types of cuisines.
Well, I think, yeah, you're right. The cooking shows caused an explosion, really, in demand for a lot of items. Fresh herbs was one of them. But, you know, chefs are notorious for looking for new products, new opportunities, something that they can use to differentiate their product from the restaurant next door. So the cooking channels did have provide a good boost for the fresh herb business, but also for a lot of other items, a lot of tropicals, mm-hmm. a lot of specialties. And a lot of the items that we were handling on our imported deals were items that weren't readily available in the U.S. They were counter-seasonal, or they were varieties that weren't grown here. And so a lot of the things that we were handling appealed to that kind of mindset, that person that's looking for something different. So like in the early 2000s, we started to really develop direct importing. I'd always worked with importers on a lot of things. I mean, well, even before 2000, we started with snow peas and snap peas in the 80s. And mm-hmm. from there, the shipper offered us Asian vegetables like Chinese eggplant and bitter melon and those kinds of things.
Wow.
And we said, okay, we'll try that. And we tried, and we built up a nice business with those things. And then the greenhouse opportunity with Agrexco came along, and they were offering us tomatoes and bell peppers. And we had red peppers in January from Israel when you couldn't find a red pepper in the USA.
And how did the program go? Were people receptive to this?
Absolutely. Once they got over the price. But I'll never forget a conversation with a chain buyer that when we had moved into Holland product, it was sold at auction. And we were buying at auction in Holland and flying it in. And he said to me, well, what will the price be for next week? And I said, I don't know, because we won't know until we buy the product.
Right. You
know, we have to pay. It's at auction. And he said, oh, well, that's no good. That's never going to work. Call me when you have a fixed price. I said, okay. So, yeah, that was a long time ago. But nowadays, these items are obviously we grow a lot of bell peppers mm-hmm. in North America, between Mexico and Canada,
especially with the greenhouse.
Yeah, and we're involved in a deal out of Mexico where, you know, we get a load a week of bell peppers, and just from one shipper. But we also have to supplement. Spain was cut out for a while, but they're back. We also supplement from Holland when the market is right, even though we fly the product in. But
that must really get expensive, the fluctuations coming from Mexico versus air shipping from the Netherlands.
Yeah, well, you know, yeah, the unfortunate thing is no grower gets rich when a market is really high or really low. So it's a question of the logistics are really what is that's the expensive part when the market is low, and it gets a little easier to manage when the market is high. And some weeks ago, we had quite a high market on bell peppers, and we could have brought them from anywhere. It wouldn't have mattered. The market was that good.
Wow. I'm sure the weather's playing a big role in that as well.
Yeah, it does. And it also, we're going into a time of year right now where Mexican supplies become less because some of the growers, they're at a period of the year where they have to clean the greenhouses out and replant for the next crop. So, but our experience with specialty items really dates back to, we formed a partnership in the 2000s, and we had a team of people that were working on imported product that was mostly persimmons from Spain, fruit from China, young coconuts and dragon fruit from Thailand and those kinds of things.
Now, dragon fruit has really started to take off here. It was something you would only see in Asian supermarkets, but now I'm starting to see it mainstream supermarkets, and the marketing for it is out there in terms of, you know, teaching people how, what it tastes like, how to peel it. It's a beautiful piece of, if nothing else, it's just beautiful to look at. Yeah, but it does taste good.
it is good, and it's attractive, and people you know, you can't help but look at it if you see it in the store. But now we're seeing that the shift was, all the production was in Southeast Asia. Now production started in Florida, actually, next. So there's a lot of production in Florida
from dragon
now.
Fruit.
Yeah, of dragon fruit. And we also have a lot of fruit coming in from South America, particularly Ecuador. So these items, as people realize there's demand, they'll plant in different parts of the world. Of course, everybody has their eye on the U.S. market because it's a fairly good sized market. USDA is a hurdle that all the growers have to get over. So as growers in different South American countries get approved for items, we see product coming in at a much lower logistics cost than what it would have cost to bring from Thailand or Vietnam.
Yeah, that makes sense. Right.
You know, but
so it's getting
those products are those products are still coming to the States because the West Coast it's a good opportunity for them because their logistics costs are so much lower from Southeast Asia to the West Coast. But on the East Coast, we get a lot of South American product, and the market can be a little sloppy from time to time. But the quality is typically very good. So over time, we moved away from that group of products. The team that we were working with, they decided they needed their own space. And so we started to concentrate on growing our wholesale business, our ripening program, because we have our own ripening program for mangoes, avocados, and plantains. And we also have a repack division. We've done a lot of work with the meal kit companies over the years. We were growing those areas, and we kind of moved a little bit away from that sort of import and distribute business model, still continuing to do direct importing on a lot of products.
Yeah, I want to hear about the brown coconuts.
Okay, so...
And is the taste different than regular coconuts, or how?
Well, brown coconuts are just mature coconuts that you would see on the shelf at any retailer without the husk. So, okay. But right now, there are so many coconut products offered in the market. There's a half a dozen different kinds of coconuts that people just want to use for the water. And there's different maturities of coconuts are used in different ways by different demographic groups. So we've been selling brown coconuts through our tropical lines for quite some time. The main supplier would be, for us, was Dominican Republic. They have lovely product. But a few years ago, when we were starting to rebuild our imports division and we wanted to beef that volume up, we met some guys who were shipping brown coconuts from Ghana. And I said, oh, yeah, well, brown coconuts is nice. We have the Dominican product. How can you compare to that? And we talked for some months. We talked to these guys and realized that they had quite an advantage price-wise. But in somewhere in the middle of our conversation, they found markets closer to home than the U.S., and we kind of broke off negotiations. But as far as product from India goes, I've been following produce from India for quite some time. Years ago, when mangoes were first allowed into the U.S. from India and Pakistan, we tried to do some deals to import directly because we have a nice following for mangoes in our wholesale business. However, after the first year of imports, the market, the supply chain for mangoes got short-circuited, and product goes directly to the individual retailers because within the Indian communities, the demand is so strong that, and you had to fly the product in anyway, there was no room for a wholesaler to get in. So we kind of backed off a little bit, but I've maintained my contacts with the fellows in India that I've been speaking to. And as far as coconuts go, I just coincidentally made a connection through LinkedIn.
Good old LinkedIn. Yeah.
With the company we're working with. And we started a conversation, and he had some product that he had already brought into the US. So he was trying to develop the US market on his own. And I said, well, you know, let me try some. So we picked up a couple of pallets and we were really pleased with it. The product competes with any product, and you know, that I think you can find anywhere. And the price point was very competitive with the Dominican product. And you
know, even though it's coming from India, it's
Well, I mean, the differences really are the quantity of product. I mean, production in India is, if I would say, somewhere around 14 million tons of coconuts.
Wow. Okay. Well, that makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going on volume. Mm-hmm.
Dominican Republic is about 450,000. Mm-hmm. So they have an advantage on product, but they also, they're shipping to a much larger audience as well. Mm-hmm. A lot of Indian coconuts are going into Europe for retailers and wholesalers and food service there. But the, shipping from India is not as expensive as you would think, although right now with the troubles in the Red Sea, we're getting some surcharges and extra charges, and they're pushing the prices up a little bit, and the transit times are a little longer.
Yeah, I think so.
But we're still, if I watch my margin and try to control that a little bit, we're still able to keep the price well below the market for Dominican product. And we've had, I would say, across the board acceptance on the product. Sizing is similar. The taste is good. The product looks fresh on arrival.
I'll have to try some of these. I love coconuts.
Yeah. There's really not a difference. I don't believe there's much of a difference.
That's what I was wondering. Are you marketing them as brown coconuts or just coconuts?
Brown coconuts is just a mature coconut, husk removed, because the USDA doesn't allow, they don't need the husk, USDA. Mm-hmm. We only want the coconut. And this coconut is used for its meat, not for the liquid inside.
Okay.
So, I mean, for years we've worked with young coconuts, the shaped, diamond-shaped coconuts that many people have seen. Those are typically only used for water. The meat isn't much in there. Mm-hmm. So it's the sweet coconut water that's inside the young coconut. With the brown coconuts, which is a pretty good volume item, the water is typically discarded and it's only the meat that people want to consume. And then that meat can be shredded, dried, frozen.
Yeah.
And our shipper in India does all of those things. They're specialists in coconuts.
Well, there you go. You become a specialist in this, bringing coconuts over and for many different purposes. And
yeah. No, it's been a good item for us. And one thing that helps is a coconut has great shelf life if it's stored at the right temperature. And we're on a program with the shipper. You know, we have our fourth container is on the water, and today I just sent an email booking the next one. So. Other than the transit times, it's going like clockwork.
That's a real success story. Is, you know, to be able to, like you said, you got the price point down, the shipping source. So as we're going to start to wrap this up, because we could go on and talk about exotic fruits for some time. It's one of my favorite subjects. But if our listeners would like to contact you to get some of these coconuts or any other product that you have, do you have any contact details?
Sure. We're not hard to find through our website. Just Google John Vena Produce and you can find information there, and there's a contact page. Or if you want to skip that, you can do email to info@johnvenaproduce.com, and our marketing team will get that and react to that. So we're not hard to find. We're right in Philadelphia. If you're nearby, we're just 2 minutes from the Philadelphia International Airport on Essington Avenue.
Well, sounds great. It's really been a pleasure to have you here today and take us to all these not exotic countries per se, Belgium or Netherlands, Israel, but they offer some great specialty products that you've been carrying. And this is what we wanted to talk about and find out more about what you're doing with these products. And you certainly have been very successful in getting them over here and out to market. So we will be in touch.
All right.
To our listeners, thank you for joining us today. And as we say here at the Produce Industry Podcast, we will see you in the fields and on the horizon.
You've been listening to the Produce Industry Podcast Global Fresh Series with Juanita Galio. Be sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, and Amazon to get new fresh episodes. For more, follow us on Instagram and Facebook at The Produce Industry Podcast. Until next time, see you in the fields or on the horizon.